Our final case for argument is 21-2111, Innovation Sciences v. Amazon. Mr. Jackson, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Judge Mazant at the District Court made a lot of rulings against us that resulted in this appeal, and in each case, those rulings were erroneous. With respect to the written description issue that was part of the alternative support for the invalidity decision, Amazon stipulated to the priority date, and that should have ended the issue. That issue should never have gone to the jury. In addition, the jury instruction itself was wrong.
So do you believe Amazon's stipulation to the priority date was a stipulation that written description requirement is met?
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
Even though they clearly were disputing it throughout?
In the final pretrial order, that's, shortly, obviously, before trial, they stipulated to that fact. It's in the stipulations of fact section.
Yes, I see the stipulation of fact section, but they were also continuing to maintain their written description defense.
Yes, and under the stipulation, they were necessary to also at the same time agreed that the specification supported the claims.
No, they agreed that that was the priority date. They didn't agree that the specification met all the requirements for that priority date. Those are two different points.
Your Honor, I respectfully read the case law differently, in particular the Rifen versus Microsoft case, which I think lays the statutory scheme out in great detail.
Yes, but that wasn't a case involving a stipulation, where here it's clear that while they were stipulating that this is the priority date, they were still continuing unequivocally throughout the process to maintain their written description defense. So it's a matter for us to understand what it was precisely they were stipulating to. So they were clearly stipulating to this is the priority date, i.e. this is the effective date that you are claiming you're entitled to for your claims, but they were clearly, by virtue of everything else in the litigation, continuing to dispute whether there was, in fact, written description support for that date in this specification. So while theoretically I understand your point, it seems to us in interpreting the documents here, it's clear that they were not acquiescing and giving up their defense in that one throwaway stipulation.
If I could make one point, Your Honor, I think to use the phrase effective filing date, as we've laid out in our briefs, necessarily means that that's the date on which the claims are first supported by the specification. So those two ideas are linked. They're essentially one and the same. When you make a determination,
Amazon made it clear that was not what they were attempting. Why don't you have about 1,000 arguments? You have to win on all of them in order to get a reversal. You're not going to win on this one. So move on to the next one.
Okay. Can I get you to the next one and stay on written description for a moment? Usually we see priority date disputes and they involve obviousness and whether or not a piece of prior art covers it or doesn't cover it. This doesn't affect the obviousness determination. So was the fight over priority date dealing with damages, the damages question? Why was this in dispute?
Your Honor, it did not have to do with damages. And to be honest with you, up until the final pretrial conference, we did not think it was an issue that was going to be litigated. I know that they, Judge Moore's point, that they had put that in their interrogatory responses, but it was never actually picked up on and litigated. And when we got to the final pretrial conference, we believed that this issue was going away, and it didn't. So I think what they're...
So what is the issue? What is the legal... Is it your view that even if, let's assume the priority date was the date that you stipulated to, and the other side, that the written description obligation that... exists, that you just should look at the specification for what? Just the 2017 claims and not anything that preceded that? Or what date do you pick in terms of what specification we rely on for written description support?
So, Your Honor, excellent question. Under the Rifen versus Microsoft and other cases, you look at the specification of the patents in suit themselves to determine whether the written description requirement in Section 112 satisfy or not.
So we're just looking at the 2017 specification, that's it?
Because
I read your There's obviously a lot going on in this case, and the record seems pretty fulsome. But I read your expert's testimony that you seem to rely on here, and it came up with the date of May 2007, and that's what it was. Your expert was talking about, not the 2017 date.
Ultimately, Your Honor, it doesn't matter in this case because Amazon didn't rely on any intervening prior art, and therefore, whether we're allowed to rely on 35 U.S.C. 120 to claim an earlier date or not does not affect the validity of the claims because there was no intervening prior art. So I agree that what happens, first of all, I think it was August 2006 and February 2007 dates, which show up in the jury instruction. That was part of our disclosure of intentions at the beginning of the case. And when we went to trial, the decision was made, look, there isn't any intervening prior art anyway. Amazon never relied on any.
Yeah, but in order to resolve the written description dispute, you have to figure out what patent you're looking at, so you can identify the correct specification, which has to provide support for written description, right?
That's right.
Position is that it's 2017, which is the date of this patent? What is your view of what the date is?
The date is the actual filing date of each of the three patents. And those are common, they share a common specification. One is a continuation of the other and so forth. And that specification, just for clarity, I don't think it's an issue, but I just want to be clear. That specification was originally filed in 2013. There were continuations.
Okay, and I'm mistaken in my recollection of what the record said, because I thought your expert, when he was testifying on support and specification, was relying on May 2007. Am I just mistaken about my recollection of the record here?
No, Your Honor, you're correct. He, in responding to their contention that there was no support back in the, I think it was the May, I'm sorry, August 2006 and the February 2007 specifications, he was essentially saying, well, clearly there is support in the May 2007 disclosure. That was his position.
Following the Chief's suggestion, can we move on to the other question, which is you didn't object to the jury instruction, right? You didn't object to the burden shifting issue that you suggest here on appeal when you objected to the jury instruction. Is that correct?
Well, we objected to the jury instruction in its totality because as originally written, it was frankly circular in that
did you lodge a specific objection to the jury instruction that involved the burden shifting question that you know what I'm talking about, right? The part of the jury instruction that suggests Hamilton's, what Amazon was arguing, was that it's your burden and not his. Did you object to that?
I don't know that we objected in the context of the 112, I'm sorry, of the written description instruction, but clearly we have, excuse me. We have other jury instructions that talk about the burden of proof and who bore the burden of proof, and that was clearly given to the jury as part of the court's charge.
You're saying that on appeal here, your challenge to the jury instruction with respect to written description does not include the portion of the instruction that speaks to who has to show what by clear and convincing evidence?
Well, specifically, Your Honor, no, but I think that's endemic within the scope of the jury instructions. As we were talking about with respect to the stipulation, I think you have to look at the totality of, obviously, the circumstances, and we have clear jury instructions as to who bore the burden of proof, and obviously we're fine with that because it put the burden on Amazon. This instruction, it doesn't explicitly say that we bear the burden, but it talks about how the specification had to show, like, clear and convincing evidence that it was supported by the earlier applications, which the court then erroneously included dates for and said it was the August 2006 and February 2007 filings, which is problematic for a number of reasons that I could go into.
There's also an anticipation and obviousness arguments. If we were to find there's substantial evidence to support jury findings on either anticipation or obviousness, would that sort of moot any need to reach any of this written description material?
Yes, Your Honor, I think it would, because the either one of them obviously supports the jury's verdict of invalidity.
So do you want to address any of those?
Yes. Yes, I didn't know if you had follow-up. I apologize. So with respect to the prior art, or alleged prior art, I should say, they relied on a system called the HAL system that was created in the lawyers' offices in 2019. The lawyers specified what pieces should be assembled. They've worked with Mr. Shriver, who had a company back in the early 2000s that sold the HAL software, no systems, but software. And reportedly, he assembled that system at the lawyer's instructions. In fact, at one point, had to fly out to California from the East Coast to help the lawyers put it together because they and their experts couldn't actually make it work. That's the supposed system that was the prior art that they relied on, that Amazon's expert relied upon. But there's no evidence that system, as constructed, ever existed in the prior art. Mr. Shriver never said that. He said that his company sold software and that they did not sell systems. In fact, that they only sold the software to customers, individuals would assemble it, and he said every system was unique as a snowflake, to use his phrase, and that he did not know in August of 2006 whether such a system would have existed or not. The other I'll put evidence in quotation marks. The other evidence that Amazon relied upon were these demonstrative videos showing some system. Nobody knows what that system is. In operation in the, I think it was very early 2000s. One of them famously was referred to as the Oprah video trial. But there was never any testimony from anyone, including Mr. Shriver, about how those systems were constructed. We don't know primarily it appears that his systems were wired systems, for example. That's a major distinction between what's in the claims. But there's no description of how the system was constructed and how it operated. So there was no prior art that they actually put forward that a jury could have found supported the verdict of invalidity based on the prior art. And if I could briefly, Your Honor, with respect to infringement, all four of Amazon's non-infringement arguments that they're relying on here are claim construction arguments that Judge Mazant mistakenly let go to the jury. The idea of what constituted a hub, for example, and what the requirements were on that, that was never part of his claim construction order, and yet the Amazon's expert testified about what it required to be a hub, what it meant to be a hub. With respect to the two interfaces argument, again, the black letter law of this court is that two elements of a claim to be satisfied by a single structure, unless there's something about the claim or the prosecution history or some other limitation that prevents that from being the case. So, for example, if it recited a first interface and a second interface,
You have to win on all of these to prevail, right? Because any one of them could have supported the jury's non-infringement verdict, correct? Why don't you address configured too? Because I think that sort of attacks everything, doesn't it?
So configured too, that is that they didn't set up a complete system. So the unrebutted testimony from one of Amazon's vice presidents was that they sold these accused devices bundled together with other smart home devices. And so even if you assume that the smart home device has to be part of the claim, which it does not, or set many of the claims, which they do not, then the testimony unrebutted from Amazon was they did in fact sell those complete systems. But largely, and just to take claim 22 of the 983 patent as an example, largely these claims are directed to a wireless hub or a management system device that manages other devices, manages these smart home devices. And so in claim 22, the smart home device corresponds to the claimed item. And so it's a hub for managing that item. So it has to communicate in certain ways. It has to be able to manage that using short-range wireless communication, for example. But the item itself is not affirmatively recited as part of the hub. So that's fundamentally that's the claim construction argument with respect to that defense. That's erroneous as well. And then,
counsel, you've used up almost all your rebuttal time. Do you want any at all?
I'm sorry.
Can I ask one quick question, though? Sorry, my apologies. Just a quick question on the costs. You're challenging both the video costs and the printing costs, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And I understand there are a lot of exhibits here and there are printing costs for a lot of exhibits, but how do you conclude that that's an abuse of discretion for the district court to conclude that that was a permissible expenditure that was charged?
They were sought as exemplifications, Your Honor, and this court and the Fifth Circuit have been very clear as to what an exemplification is. It has to be an accurate reproduction of a public record, and none of the exhibits they sought cost for were public records. And I apologize, Your Honor, I didn't realize it was in my rebuttal time. I can't tell the color of the light from here, but...
All right, that's enough. Thank you.
Apologies. Thank you.
Okay. Let's hear from Mr. Haddon.
Thank you. May it please the court, Dave Haddon for Amazon. Let me start with the configured question, the last one on non-infringement. IS took the position in this case that every Fire TV device, every Fire tablet, and every Echo directly infringed when it was sold by Amazon out of the box. That was their hook for trying to get damages on all those sales. But their actual infringement theory that their expert put on relied entirely on third-party Philips components, including Philips Hue light bulb, Philips Hue bridge, and the Philips cloud and application that interacted with them. Now, none of those components are part of the accused Amazon devices, and none of the accused Amazon devices are configured out of the box to work with those Philips components. What the Amazon Echo does is, if you say, turn on the light, it wakes up when it hears the word Alexa, and it sends a digitized recording of the sounds that followed to the Alexa cloud. So it does exactly the same thing if you say, Alexa, turn on the light, or Alexa, tell me a joke. The devices don't know anything about Philips, Philips bulbs, or Philips bridges, and they don't receive the short-range wireless communication that
I'm
the claims require.
Why you started with the non-infringement arguments. I mean, wouldn't the validity arguments render the patent invalid in its entirety?
I was just going in reverse order. I'm happy to switch to invalidity.
That's actually not true. If you're going in reverse order, you would have started with printing costs and exemplary.
Oh, okay. I wasn't going to spend my time on printing costs, but I apologize. I'm happy to discuss written description to start with. So these starting out the timeline,
well,
right?
I think your opposing counsel suggested that if we affirmed on either, if we could affirm on obviousness or anticipation, then we didn't need to reach written description, which seems thorny. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And so if you would rather me start with obviousness and anticipation, I'm happy to. So the prior art was a system called HAL, Home Automation Living. It was created by Mr. Shriver, who was the founder of the company and also wrote the software. And Mr. Shriver testified via deposition. He was going to testify live, but he unfortunately came down with COVID right before trial. But as he explained, he wrote the software back in the late 90s and early 2000s, and he specifically made the software interoperable with existing smart home devices, like security cameras and smart light bulbs and thermostats. So he would test his software with new devices when they came out on the market that he would get from the suppliers. And he also testified that he would provide customer support to make sure that those devices interoperated correctly with his software. And the exemplary system that was demonstrated at trial was created by Mr. Shriver in response to a subpoena for a representative system. The components were all components that he had in his possession and had purchased prior to 2006. So he assembled them, sent them to California, had them reassembled, and that was a system that was demonstrated. It was not concocted after the fact. It was the existing system that Mr. Shriver had. In addition, he testified that the functionality that Dr. Johnson primarily relied on in showing invalidity, which was the ability for the software to send an email notification when a security camera detected motion was a very common use case at the time before 2006 by his customers. So the functionality that was pointed to existed. It was part of the software. The software was designed to work with these existing prior art components like security cameras, and that's what was demonstrated and shown to the jury to meet every element of the claims. The notion of the demonstration videos, the Oprah Winfrey demonstration was actually part of the install disk of the software from 2006. So in addition to the actual software, it included a video showing this Oprah Winfrey episode that was before that, obviously, where the system was also demonstrated and showed much of the same overlapping functionality that Dr. Johnson demonstrated. So there was more than substantial evidence to support the jury's finding of invalidity based on anticipation and obviousness. Just briefly to the written description, because I think Judge Prost asked like why it mattered. It mattered because these patents were filed in 2016 and 2017, 2 and 3 years after the accused Echo device was launched and on the market. So to have any viable case, IS needed to establish an earlier priority date. And consistent with the local patent rules in Eastern Texas, they had to identify their priority date in their initial 3-1 disclosure. They did. They picked the August 2006 date. That was the date that their expert relied on in his expert report. That was the date that was relied on by our expert, Dr. Johnson, in providing his written description opinion. And that was the date that IS trumpeted in their opening statement, and that their first witness, Ms. Wong, one of the inventors, testified was the priority date, and that the application she filed on August 2006 fully supported all of the claims in this case. So it was only in the middle of the trial where IS tried to back away from that date and try to come up with something else. But by that time, it was too late, and Amazon can't be put in the position of whack-a-mole. If you look at the file wrapper here, there's like 20 or plus applications.
Just to be clear, you brought this on yourself. You stipulated to the date. You brought this on yourself right now in argument. You didn't have to address this argument. But for you to suggest they've got you playing whack-a-mole or something, you stipulated to the date. Full stop. That was it. You stipulated to the date. You didn't have to stipulate to the priority date, but you did. And you lied in your brief when you said you didn't stipulate to it. So this is the one thing in this whole case where I was really disappointed, and I was going to let it go. But you've decided not just to stand here and take on the argument, but to make derogatory whack-a-mole type comments about the other side. Not okay.
Well, I disagree, Your Honor. What we stipulated to was the priority date, as you suggested in your opening question.
The priority date. You just a minute ago said, okay, wait, let's turn to page 49 of your brief. Go to page 49 of your brief. Right after the cite to Motion Medical Tech, I'd like you to read me the sentence in your brief.
Yes, Your Honor.
Go ahead, read it. Here.
I read it. Here, Amazon did not stipulate to a priority date.
Here you
nor did it concede that the asserted claims had written descriptions.
Here, Amazon did not stipulate to a priority date. Did you or did you not stipulate to a priority
date? I agree. I agree that is a misstatement, Your Honor.
Okay.
But it was clear that from the pretrial statement that what we were doing was agreeing that the priority date that IS was relying on as the effective filing date was the August 2006 date that they specified in the local patent rules, that they specified in their expert report, and that was the date that governed what was prior art in this case. And it also governed what specification had to meet the written description requirement. And that is the position we took throughout the case, throughout the trial, and that is the correct position. They picked their priority date. They had to live by it. And we showed that it did not support that specification did not support the claims that were filed in 2017.
Would you turn now to the printing costs and exemplification costs, please?
Yes, Your Honor.
I'd like you to address how a graphic artist's preparation of trial exhibits could be exemplification costs.
If exemplification costs are limited to the reproduction of a public record, I agree they are not. But under the Fifth Circuit law, our understanding, as Judge Mazant agreed, was that these are the types of costs that are now considered appropriate.
But isn't there a difference between the cost of producing the graphic, reproducing the actual graphic once it's made, and the underlying cost for making the graphic in the first place?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Sure.
And are you claiming the cost for making the graphic?
I think they were drastically reduced. And to show you that,
because I'm confused, but it seemed to me that some of these categories cover cost for making the graphic, not reproducing it.
I think part of the cost of making the graphic was included.
And that would be wrong.
And that's beyond exemplification, then that would be
wrong. Well, that's clearly beyond exemplification. Even if we have a broader definition of what copies are, making the original exhibit is not copying the exhibit.
I agree with that.
But you asked for it.
My understanding was that under the Fifth Circuit law, those types of graphic costs had been awarded.
Including making it rather than just copying it.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Even though this is a provision, even if Broaden is about copies, not. Sounds more like some kind of expert, you know, witness cost or something like that. It's services, not copying.
I absolutely agree that creating graphics is not copying.
Okay, counsel, anything else?
Nothing else.
Thank you. Let's, Mr. Jackson, you have some rebuttal time. I'll restore 2 minutes of rebuttal time. Can you hear us okay? You're muted.
I'm sorry, can you hear me now?
Now we gotcha.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you for the extension. Two quick things. One on the prior art. This court and the Supreme Court have been very clear there has to be corroboration with respect to prior art. In the barbed wire case, I think there were close to a dozen prior art witnesses. That was deemed insufficient. There has to be documentary proof that the prior art, as it's alleged to have existed, actually existed. We don't have that in this case. We have Mr. Shriver giving testimony that doesn't, in fact, say that it even existed as constructed by him in 2019. But even if he had said that, that wouldn't be enough under barbed wire. And I would also ask the court to review the Juicy Whip versus Orange Fang case, where Judge Lynn at length goes through this court's prior precedent as well as the barbed wire case, talking about the requirement for corroboration. With respect to the written description requirement, again, Amazon's counsel's arguments reveals a fundamental misunderstanding of the way 35 U.S.C. 120 works in conjunction with 35 U.S.C. 102. 120 is all about finding out the earliest date at which the claim is supported, and then from there, that defines the universe of prior art. Anything prior to that or more than a year prior to that qualifies as prior art. We, under Local Rule 3-1, were required to give our contention, and it literally says the contention that they contend your claims are entitled to, and that was all that was. They were free to use later prior art and as part of their burden of proving invalidity, show that we were not entitled to that date. And in fact, it was a later date, and therefore the prior art they were relying on is invalidating. And that is the factual context that comes up in all of the cases that they've cited, with respect to finding claims that are invalidated based on the failure to comply with the written description requirement. They're essentially shorthanding two steps into one when the court uses language about how failure to prove the priority date results in invalidity. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank both counsel. This case is taken under submission.